Chapter 12.
As I understand it, the human sense of smell is somewhat underdeveloped in comparison with most other species. Sometimes I think that's a shame. There are attractive scents that might be even more alluring when given depth. But when the fragrance slithering into my nostrils is the obnoxious sort, I'm glad we can only smell so much. My trips to Rhodia, for example, gave me cause to be thankful for humanity's stunted olfactory nerves. Another time for such gratitude was 2 days after meeting Saket, when I was hunched in a Denan sewer, populated not only by waste, but also by things feeding on waste, and thereby creating their own. We'd spent the previous day preparing madly for the liberation of Drusil Beforin, beginning by leaving a message at the Alliance dead drop that Major Derlin's team needed to move the Givens family to Omarith immediately. We then scouted the location and shopped for necessities, especially for R2's upgrade, but also some additional layers of clothing for quick changes. After not enough sleep and a quick breakfast, the early morning was spent on new contingencies we had thought of in the night, abort scenarios, and finally getting into position ahead of Drusil's arrival. Mentally reviewing the given greeting maths that Leia taught me distracted me somewhat from the fact that I was crouched in slime up to my ankles, and could almost feel spores of mold and mildew latching on to all available surface area inside my lungs. It was dark, except for the wan light streaming in through drainage grates around the corner, and I could hear creatures splashing in the water or scrabbling among the refuse in search of a meal, or maybe a way out. Something small screamed, cut off abruptly, and then something large belched. I stared at my new comm unit, willing it to squawk to life and tell me to move. Waiting around with nothing to do is terrible, but waiting around with nothing to do in the sewer is worse. I worried that the signal wouldn't get through the cement above me, and I'd miss my cue, bungling everything despite testing the link yesterday. Technology is always perfectly dependable until it isn't. But soon, I got a chirp that indicated R2 and Nakari were in their chosen positions, and a second chirp that told me that our target had been sighted approaching the cafe. These signals were no more than meaningless pings, free of any content that the Imperial security droid could reasonably interpret as a threat. They carried a wealth of information to me, however. The third chirp from R2 was a ready signal. In less than a minute, he would act. I pulled out my blaster and checked for perhaps the fifth time that it was dialed up to its maximum power and rose from my squatting position, pressing my back against the wall of the tunnel. If the security droid detected my movement below now, that was fine. It would be a distraction from what R2 was doing, which was opening a tiny hatch on his dome to reveal a small ion blaster we had installed the day before. He would fire at the security droid and disable it, which was really key to the operation's success. Without its recorded memory and transmissions of the kidnapping in progress, the ISB security forces would have to rely on information given to them in real time by human resources, and Nakari was supposed to take care of that. The final chirp came, and I moved, turning the corner to my left and closing on a wide drainage grate located just off the curb of the cafe sidewalk and outdoor dining area. R2 must have fired and hit his target, for a sizzle and hiss of electric screams floated down, followed by a loud crash, percussive thumps, and then screams from the throats of various panicked beings. I added to the noise by firing repeatedly at the edges of the drainage grate until it fell away, leaving a hole down which one could fall or intentionally jump. By the time I was finished, some of the voices had faded. The people shouting had moved away from the exploding drainage grate and from droids falling out of the sky. It gave me the opportunity to be heard up above. "Drusil Beforin!" I yelled as loud as I could. "I'm from the Alliance, and we have your family! Please, hurry! Down here!" The Given moved with surprising swiftness. I heard her chair clatter to the sidewalk in her haste to join me. Her pale head appeared in the rectangular frame of the hole, and her cavernous eye sockets looked down. the slope of the brow suggesting that she was upset with me. I supposed I would never feel comfortable with her expression if it was fixed like that.
"Where is my family?"
she called. Her voice sounded muffled and sticky, as if she were speaking around a mouthful of nut butter. Maybe she was. She had been relaxing at a cafe, after all.
"On the way to Omarith, as you wished. We have to move quickly. Please, jump down."
She placed her toes at one edge, squatted, leaned forward until her hands gripped the opposite edge, then dropped down, hanging in the air for a moment before letting go to drop down the last half meter. Her knees bent, absorbing the impact, and then she stood and turned to regard me with those pit-like eyes, adjusting around her right shoulder the strap of a carry sack that had shaken loose during her swing down. It looked like she had a data pad in there at least, and perhaps some other things.
"I do not normally follow strange humans into dark places,"
she informed me.
"But considering the quick disposal of my security detail, the probability that you are who you claim to be is quite high."
"Greetings from the Alliance. It's a pleasure to meet you. I'm Luke Skywalker."
It was time to regurgitate the equation I'd memorized this morning.
"While we escape the remainder of your guards, would you mind giving me the eigenvalues and eigenvectors for the 3x3 matrix 1, negative 3, 3, then 3, negative 5, 3, and 6, negative 6, 4?
"I am charmed, Luke Skywalker. Well met."
I led her around the corner of the first turn, which would get us out of immediate sight of the street's drainage tunnel and into the sewer proper, but had only gone a few steps before her voice said behind me,
"To answer your question, the eigenvalues for that matrix would be 4, negative 2, and negative 2 with the associated vectors square root of 6 over 6 times the vector 1, 1, 2, square root of 2 over 2 times the vector negative 1, 0, 1, and square root of 2 over 2 times the vector 1, 1, 0. That would be normalized and rationalized, of course."
"Of course," I replied, though I had only a vague idea what she was talking about. It gave me a glimpse at the staggering mathematical intellect behind that blank face, however. Hard to believe she had calculated that in her head so quickly. Leia had offered to walk me through the problem, but I knew it would have taken a quadratic formula and a set of ground teeth to get an answer in 5 minutes. Drusel had solved it in a few seconds. Hoping to distract her from presenting me with a similar question, I wasn't sure I remembered what an eigenvalue was, even after my crash course, I added,
"We need to move quickly through this sewer system to an exit where I have a speeder waiting. We'll take that to a docking platform in the next district, where we have a ship ready to take you off planet. The faster we move, the better chance we have to escape before the Empire tries to shut down outgoing traffic."
The filth grew steadily worse the deeper we traveled into the sewer, as assorted small tributaries of goo gurgled to join our larger sluice. We sloshed our way through the muck at a respectable trot, using a pocket lamp to light our way. I was following the same path out that I had taken to get in, turning at each junction in reverse order. Shouts and echoes of pursuit bounced off the walls somewhere behind us, but Drusel before and ignored that. She was determined instead to greet me properly.
"I will certainly move at my best speed, Luke Skywalker. While we move, can you math something math for me with something math?"
Drusel used proper terms, of course, and precise numbers, but I don't recall exactly what she asked me or even if I knew all the terms to begin with. It sounded, however, like she asked me a question with a single answer, instead of a set of values and vectors.
Let me see. That would be... 3?
The given made a phlegmy noise in her throat that might have been laughter.
"Excellent."
Yes, it was excellent. Thank the stars for 3PO's and Leia's experience with given. A pause in conversation allowed me to hear more clearly. It may have been my imagination, but it sounded as though our pursuers were growing closer. I knew Nakari had taken out at least the 2 guards closest to Drusel, and R2 had neutralized the security droid,
otherwise the Given wouldn't be here with me. But that still left up to 6 ISB agents able to pursue and call for backup to capture us. Or what was more likely, recapture Drusel and execute me. Before I could ask Drusel anything about her remaining security, she asked a question of her own.
Did I hear you use a first-person plural regarding our transport off-planet? I believe you said we have a ship ready. Might that mean you have Confederates?
Yes, a droid and a sniper. They'll be meeting us.
Ah, the two who disrupted my security detail. I see. They will probably be fine if they are vectoring to some point ahead of us on the surface. But I am obliged to tell you that my calculations suggest a high probability of us being accosted before our arrival at your rendezvous point.
How can you know that? You don't even know where we're going.
I do not know for certain. I did say probability, not certainty. But I can make educated guesses as to our destination based on extant variables and predict that our pursuit shall catch up to us prior to our exit, unless they behave stupidly.
Isn't that one of your extant variables?
The worst possible kind. As you may well know, unlike kinetics or time or distance, human stupidity is incalculable.
Hey, I guess there's no arguing that. Let's see if we can increase our rate and reduce the probability of this confrontation, you see.
That would be wise.
Stepping up our pace increased the noise of our passage and made us more likely to trip and get a face full of something unspeakable. But I'd far rather risk that than getting shot in the back. Thinking of the ISB agents, however, caused me to forget that the sewers were otherwise inhabited. As we arrived at a junction where we were supposed to take a left, a growl and a flash of teeth warned me in time to keep all my digits. But only just. A squat, four-legged creature cruised past me in the air as I jerked backward, its jaws open for the lamp and crunching down on it. Probably taking the tips of my fingers off as well, judging by the sharp stab of pain I felt. The light winked out in the guts of the thing, plunging us into darkness. We were deep in the tunnels now, and there were no street-level drainage grates above us. "Stay back!" I warned Drusel, as I heard the creature choke and spit up the lamp. It wasn't working anymore. Maybe it was simply in the off position rather than broken. But I wasn't about to search in the dark for it in the bottom of a sewer with something hungry nearby. We needed to see. So I pulled my lightsaber from my belt and hoped it would give off enough ambient light to spot the creature before it attacked again. Holding it in front of me in a defensive stance, I turned it on as I heard the creature snarl and thrash in the filth. The blue plasma blade bloomed up, and my eyes dilated in the darkness. Saw the thing open its mouth and bunch its powerful back legs for a spring at my throat. The teeth appeared as slimy, greenish icicles, though perhaps that was an illusion of the poor light. And the beast had large nostrils and ears of pale skin, but only 2 tiny eye spots. Its lack of fur was doubtless a mercy down here. The nostrils flared and the ears cocked in my direction, and then it leapt at me, jaws agape. Certain now that I would be far more edible than a pocket lamp. There was little time or space to do much more than dodge to one side and slash down reflexively at a clear threat. I'm sure my swipe at it would score me no approval from anyone trained in martial arts. But in that confined space, it was effective enough. The blade sheared off a slice of its cheek and perhaps a few teeth. Its momentum slammed the creature into my shoulder in a passing broadside. But all that earned me was a greasy smear of burnt flesh rather than any injury. Howling in pain and fear, the creature turned upon landing and scuttled directly away from us. Accustomed to ambushing its meals, it had no taste for the kind that fought back. Unfortunately, its attack and subsequent retreat allowed the ISB agents not only to get a fix on us via the noise it made, but also to close some of the distance between us.
They're down there!
I heard one shout, as Drusel said.
Remarkable. Is that a real lightsaber? The odds of encountering a being with a lightsaber in this galaxy now are fantastically low. Why, the probability is so small as to...
Come on! Follow the lightsaber. We're turning left here.
Instead of following immediately, Drusel shook her head, which I barely perceived by the pale blades of her cheekbones dancing from side to side.
There's no need to worry, Luke Skywalker. My vision is somewhat better than that of a human. I can see well enough to avoid obstacles.
A blaster bolt zipped by us, and the sound of its firing echoed and amplified in the tunnel. Pinpoints of light down the tunnel indicated pocket lamps like the one I'd recently lost. I assume you saw that, then? Let's go!
With alacrity, yes.
We turned the corner as our pursuers fired again, but this time the sound was different. The warped electric flutter of a stun blast. In the small diameter of the tunnel, it would spread out to fill the entire area, making it impossible to avoid. Except that we had already turned the corner, and it passed behind us, weakened, and close to dissipation after traveling such a long distance. The flare of it briefly illuminated my path, for which I was grateful. Drusel asked,
Are we growing closer to your planned point of egress? The probability of your death increases with every second we remain subterranean.
Yeah, we just need to take one more right turn, and then we should start seeing some drainage lights.
Finding the turn itself might be tricky, though, with only a lightsaber to see by. Don't know how I'm going to find it in the dark.
Is it the first right turn down this passage?
Yeah. Why?
You just passed it.
I tried to stop too quickly, slid in the slime, and prepared myself for a graceless landing while trying to make sure I didn't slay myself with the lightsaber. The impact was much softer and squishier than I anticipated. I didn't want to think about what kind of substances might be providing the cushion. Getting up involved squelching noises that would haunt my dreams later, and the odor was nearly enough to make me retch. I probably would have let it happen had we not been in such a rush.
Hurry, they are coming,
Drusel said.
Shall I lead you? I can't see fine detail, but I can see more than well enough to navigate.
Yeah, go ahead,
I said, stretching out with my left hand. It was covered in muck, and was also the one that had been scraped and bitten by that creature. But the Given grabbed it and pulled me along into a passage that I had completely missed in the dark. Just before we left the tunnel in which I fell, I saw the beams of ISB pocket lamps off to my right and heard their urgent footsteps. They were very close.
We should see some light from above soon. And a ladder on the left leading up to the surface. There's a service access door set in the street between two buildings. We climb that, and there should be a speeder there waiting for us.
Yes, I see the light. That should help us both. Can you run faster?
Yes, I can manage.
This particular passage wasn't cursed with the muck and buildup of the others. It was used for rain drainage and access to the deeper tunnels, so the floor was only slick with the remaining dribble of the previous night's light showers.
Up ahead, I saw shafts of sunlight spearing down into the gloom from the street. That oriented me, gave me more confidence in lengthening my stride.
Behind us, voices and splashes grew quite loud, and I looked back to see the eyes of two pocket lamps pass by our position. Then a third in the rear paused, swung our way, and the person holding it shouted to the others to come back. I probably should have turned off my lightsaber as soon as I saw the sunlight. That might have fooled them a few more seconds before they realized their mistake and doubled back. But since we'd been spotted, I was glad I had it ready. I switched it from my right hand to my left, because that would allow me to wield it defensively as I climbed the ladder. My fingertips still stung, and my hand was covered in slime, but it functioned well enough.
You go first, fast as you can, I told Drusel. There should be a human woman with dark curly hair and an astromech droid waiting. go with them. She obeyed and began to climb, but called down,
What about you?
I'm following right behind you. The agent who'd spotted us had waited for his backup to join him before plowing forward together. The beams of three pocket lamps approached, no doubt held by agents whom Nakari and I had seen circling in the park 2 days before. I wondered if they had ever met Darth Vader and seen what he could do with a lightsaber. If so, they might know more about lightsabers than I did. If they shot blaster bolts at me, I might be able to catch one or two of them on the blade as I had with that training remote back on the Millennium Falcon, but I doubted my weak skills in the Force would allow me to deflect repeated fire from three blasters at once. But if they shot stun blasts, well, I didn't know exactly what would happen. But following a hunch, I activated the stud to lock it into the on position. Drusel was three-quarters of the way up. I began to climb behind her in an awkward three-limbed process, holding my lightsaber out behind me in an attempt at misdirection. In the dark, the agent's eyes would naturally focus on the light source, and since they would probably be firing at me in seconds, it would be wise to make sure my body wasn't behind where they would be aiming. I figured I would gain only seconds or fractions of seconds by it, but that might be enough to get me out of there. One thing I didn't consider was how difficult it would be for them to judge distance in those conditions. I could hear them arguing about how close I was because they didn't want to shoot too soon, and that gave us another couple of seconds. When Drusel opened the access door, however, and a square of natural light fell down and illuminated us both, they realized we were much closer than they thought, and we were about to escape.
There they are!
I see them!
Stun them now!
This might be it. I hoped Drusel would get away and give the Alliance an edge in the war, regardless of what happened to me. She was pulled bodily through the opening by Nakari, giving me a clear path up and out. I wouldn't make it before the ISB had taken their shots, though. They raised their blasters at me and fired, expanding blue halos of energy that would disrupt my neural system and drop me unconscious, or maybe even kill me, considering I would be getting three blasts at almost the same instant. Choosing to stun instead of shoot plasma bolts at me, however, indicated that they would like an interrogation before my execution. I held my lightsaber in front of me, blade aligned horizontally, but pointing slightly toward the agents so that the tip would meet the oncoming wave first. There was no dodging to be done, and no great skill with the Force required. Either the lightsaber would save me, or it wouldn't. And it did. Sort of. There was a crackle as the blasts hit the blade, and a blue spider web of energy that shimmered outward as the blast dissipated, leaving me conscious and the ISB agents flabbergasted. But before it dissipated, some of the energy kissed the fingers I was using to hold the hilt of the lightsaber. They went numb, and I dropped the weapon. Perhaps against a single stun blast, that wouldn't have happened. But against three, something got through. Now the agents could simply fire again, and I'd be knocked out. Nakari! Help! I yelled as I leapt down from the ladder, grabbed my blaster, and fired at the agents, who were slow to recognize that the tactical situation had abruptly changed. They recovered quickly after the first one cried out with a charred hole in his chest. Whatever armor he was wearing wasn't up to deflecting the heat from my blaster turned up to maximum. The second one, standing in the middle, fired a stun blast a split second after my shot rocked him, and the charge sailed harmlessly into the ceiling. The third one, however, had a clear shot at me, and he took it. His blaster pointed down so that the center of the blast would slam into me. One of the features of stunning someone is that you don't have to be a very good sharpshooter thanks to the spreading footprint of the blast. But in this case, that worked in my favor. The lower edge, skimming the wet floor, ran into the blade of my lightsaber, still glowing and lying prone on the floor. And as soon as it did, the blade dissipated the blast with the same crackle of electricity as before. Nakari shot the last agent before I could, her bolt coming from above. I looked up and saw her head and right arm dangling down the access hatch. She'd fired accurately upside down. Thanks, I said.
No problem. Hold on.
She calmly fired again into the body of each agent. Why'd you do that?
Need to make sure. You'll be vulnerable for a few seconds while you climb up here. And if one of them is still alive, we can't have him taking a free shot at you.
It was a valid point, but not one I had considered. Even if I had thought of it, I'm not sure I would have followed through and shot them again. Something about it struck me as bloodthirsty, or simply not quite right. I'd have to think about it some more. I kept all such thoughts to myself as I holstered my blaster, retrieved my lightsaber, and returned it to my belt after turning it off. It was my first opportunity to get a good look at my left hand. There was skin missing around the knuckles and a bit off the tips, and it was still bleeding. It was also completely soiled and horrific, and I needed to get it scoured and dipped in an entire vat of sanitizing solution. But we weren't out of trouble yet. I imagined we wouldn't be for quite some time. I longed for time enough to make myself presentable before ascending into public, but we had to get to the ship as fast as possible. I climbed up quickly and immediately began to strip off my, formerly, white outer tunic. We had planned to change later anyway, but I couldn't wait. The dark tunic underneath was wet and probably smelled awful, but at least it wasn't encrusted with waste. Nakari wrinkled her nose.
Oh, Luke, what is that all over you? Did you slip and fall into...
Let's not talk about it, okay? If we don't say it out loud, then maybe I can forget about it in a few thousand years.
Hey, everybody has accidents.
She was fighting hard to stifle a smile, but appeared to be losing the battle. I'm sure I was blushing. I felt the heat in my face. Nakari kicked the access door shut, and we crammed into an enclosed speeder with a dark-tinted cockpit. R2 and Drusel were already waiting inside, and I shoved the repulsors to maximum thrust, heading for a parking structure at the edge of the district. Nakari and Drusel exchanged equations courteously, and Drusel thanked us for the continuing rescue attempt.
I do hope to reiterate my gratitude after a successful escape, she added,
her words emphasizing that we still had a long way to go. We had another rented speeder waiting in the parking structure, and we took the time to change clothes completely before getting out into the view of security cams. We had a cowled hood for Drusel to wear so that her face would be completely hidden, and R2 would attempt to jam local transmissions for the few minutes we were inside the garage, since we could do little to disguise him. When we had planned the operation the day before, I thought this part was an excess of caution and sacrifice speed for skullduggery. But Nakari insisted. She was convinced the ISB would be scouring all security feeds in search of us. And if they picked us up before we got off-planet, we'd be hard-pressed to fight off the reinforcements they could summon. R2 had programmed a course into the speeder's rudimentary navigation computer that would take it out of the garage and fly a random pattern in the Lodos district. It was a ruse that wouldn't hold up forever, but like everything else we did, it was designed to give us a bit more time. We just needed enough to jump out of the system. Let them go ahead and piece everything together, Nakari said, just as long as they did so too late to stop us. While R2's jamming program operated, we clambered into another speeder, also with an opaque cockpit, and drove that out of Lodos while our decoy drove deeper into it. We saw local and Imperial law enforcement vehicles dart overhead along vectors that would place them in the neighborhood of the cafe, and Nakari looked faintly smug. Any predictions on the probability of them catching up with us, Drusel? I asked.
I don't have enough data to perform the calculations, she replied. It would be an equation filled entirely with variables and few real numbers at this point, resulting in little more than a guess.
Oh, sorry.
Perhaps you could tell me if you have solid proof that my family is safe, or if you are speaking of probabilities, she asked.
Probabilities, I admitted. We let the Alliance know that we would be attempting to snatch you today. so a separate team should be extracting your family now. I hoped Major Durlin had succeeded, or we would have an extremely unhappy Given on our hands.
Or they may have already done so, Nakari said. We won't know until we get to Omarith, unfortunately.
Why Omarith, if I may ask? I said to Drusel.
It is insignificant and of little interest to either the Empire or the Alliance. Negligible infrastructure, no sentient life forms, and poor mineral prospects have condemned the planet to a vacation destination for adventurers. It cannot support a large population, or indeed many modern conveniences, without significant off-world imports. No one would suspect a cryptographer would live someplace so cut off from active networks of trade and military staging areas. It is among the least probable places to find me. I have done the math, I assure you.
Smirking, I said, I don't doubt it. We'll talk more once we get out of the system. I guided the speeder to a soft landing on our docking platform, a short distance from the Desert Jewel. As with the previous speeder, we sent it flying away on a pre-programmed course as soon as we disembarked. There was a chance this one wouldn't be found right away, so R2 had programmed it to land safely before it ran out of fuel.
I sure hope the Imperials haven't begun to check outbound ships, Nakari said as the ramp descended and we boarded the craft.
How many of my security team survived?
Drusel asked.
Two were slain next to me, three in the sewer. That leaves three more, unless you killed them later.
No, that's right, Nakari confirmed.
Three survived and are no doubt coordinating the attempt to reacquire us. R2 rolled into the starboard quarters to hook up with the Jewel's nav computer. He already knew our first jump, but needed to fine-tune calculations for our earliest possible exit. I headed straight for the cockpit to get the Jewel fired up, while Nakari and Drusel continued to talk in the corridor. The Given was listing gaps in Imperial knowledge, primarily due to taking out the security droid. That all added up to time.
They knew you and your astromech droid were involved, but may not have seen Luke until he emerged from the sewer behind me. I assume by now they have discovered that site by homing in on the comm units of the three slain ISB agents. They will be scouring the city and looking for that first speeder for sure. The question is not whether they'd be willing to activate their orbital resources and anger the civilian population for the chance to prevent our escape. The question is how long they'll delay before giving that order.
Trying to lock down traffic here would be a tall order, since Deenan rested at the intersection of two of the galaxy's most well-traveled hyperspace lanes. They might not realize we're with the Alliance, I called back as I checked the systems, and was gratified by a row of green lights. We could be mercenaries working for the Hutts or something.
That is true, but it will probably have no bearing on their decision-making. They wish me to remain under their control, and will exert themselves to ensure that happens.
Understood, but if they think we're with the Hutts, they might waste time searching for us in the criminal underworld here. Perhaps I was overthinking it. I could see how pondering the possibilities might slow down command decisions. Up to now, I had been given little freedom to plan and execute operations on my own. Mostly, I flew where the Alliance told me to fly, and shot what they told me to shoot. There's an undeniable pleasure in ruining the Empire's day with blasters, but planning and anticipating enemy moves had a different appeal that I was beginning to appreciate. I released the brakes and said, "Better strap in somewhere. We're taking off, and this could be an exciting trip." Nakari showed Drusel into the starboard living quarters and then joined me in the cockpit, taking the co-pilot seat and flipping on an intercom channel to the quarters so that both R2 and Drusel could hear us. The Desert Jewel lifted smoothly from her berth and sliced through the atmosphere without any Imperial pursuit. Once I set the course, I asked R2 to monitor security channels as a subroutine while maintaining our hyperspace jump as his top priority. We were going to jump coreward along the Hydean Way to Exidine.
and from there we would take a smaller hyperspace lane called the Nanthri Trade Route that would eventually offer several different ways to reach Amarth. The sky burned away, and stars replaced it as we left Deenan's atmosphere with no trouble. Commenting on it drew a wry chuckle from Drusel.
You should hear of trouble soon enough. The probability is almost certain.
R2 blurted an alarm, and a stream of characters appeared on our heads-up holo display. Translating his words,
Empire has ordered a system-wide blockade to seize rebel spies. Interdictor cruisers en route. All ships that depart prior to Imperial inspection will be noted.
Drusel's prescience made me want to spend more time studying math.
Let them note it. Do you have the course ready? Jump if you do.
Jumping.
I had hoped we would get out of the system without being tagged for pursuit, but that plan was slagged now.
We had to hope that our ship would move faster than any dragnet the Empire put together.